Hello and welcome to the Kids Have No Idea podcast. We're a relatively new channel. We have two main videos up and a great review of Sifu. So if you're new to the channel, it's a pleasure having you here today and please check out our previous videos. But firstly, just want to see how the guys are doing. So Sanj, how's your week been, mate?
It's been pretty quiet except for, you know, Storm Eunice making disruptions to my garden and like parts of other neighbors' roofs are in my garden, fences down, you know, but I've fared okay. I didn't venture outside, so all good.
Awesome. Cool. And what about you, Nav?
Do you know what? I've had a whale of a time. I've been on holiday. I was actually in Wales where Eunice actually hit.
So literally a whale of a time.
Had a whale of a time. Been fantastic. Yeah, no, doing great. Looking forward to this podcast. Guys, like, comment and subscribe. Click that bell. No, do all that magical stuff.
So a few new trailers have dropped in the past couple of weeks. I was just wondering if you guys saw the new Chippendales Rescue Rangers trailer.
I haven't had a chance, no.
No, I haven't either.
Okay, well, we're going to try something kind of new and different today. We're going to be watching the trailers live. So if we can just queue up the Chippendales Rescue Ranger trailer.
All right, this is a bit different. Chipmunks into international superstars. But his success took Chip and Dale to new heights. To many more seasons of the Rescue Rangers. We were living the dream, dancing the Roger Rabbit with Roger Rabbit. Okay. No one ever imagined. It could all come crashing down. Torn by vanity. You look different. Hey, it's no secret I had the CGI surgery done. Consumed by temptation. My love of cheese got the best of me. I just love it so much. More, please. Is it possible that two living legends are destined to reunite? I'm thinking reboot. Nobody wants a reboot.
It's the Rescue Rangers. You need a disguise or something. Grab the first thing you can.
Remember that animation style where everything looked real but nothing looked right?
Who are you?
Are you talking to us?
Obviously.
But it looks like you're talking to that window.
It actually looks like I'm looking right at you.
Okay.
Look at my eyes, looking right at your eyes.
Yeah.
Okay, Nav, what do you think?
Well, let's just talk about a little bit about that. I think that was interesting, actually. It was interesting. It's not what I expected. Let's put it that way.
So, what were you expecting?
Well, not that. I mean, I remember Chippendales.
That's sad.
I remember Chippendales, and so was there two movies? The two Chippendales movies when we were kids?
I have literally not seen a single Chippendales movie. I wasn't aware there was one. I just remember the TV series as a kid.
Right. Sanj?
I mean, I watched the TV show and I've definitely seen one of the movies. I don't know if I've watched both. But yeah, no, I wasn't expecting that. Happy to see that it's got a very different take. It's got a bit of a obviously 2D with real life people in animation, like similar to Roger Rabbit, who was also in the trailer. So I like the vibe totally, especially with Lonely Island being obviously quite behind this. I love their comedy style. It's a bit out there, wacky. It looks really interesting. I'm looking forward to actually watching this.
I mean, to be fair, so like the it was very obviously Andy Samberg voicing Dale, and I like John Mulaney. So to me, that's, yeah, it's interesting. I think I again really like the Lonely Island comedy. I just don't know. I was wrong. There wasn't any Chippendales movies. I think I was getting confused with another show. But it's just I don't know. There's something about that that just didn't resonate with me. I think it's supposed to maybe tug on the those member berries, and it just didn't. It didn't hit it for me. I mean, there were some clear jokes there that I found like quite intense. Like the whole I've had the CGI thing, and he's kind of one CGI, one's not. Like that was quite interesting.
I thought that was hilarious. The CGI surgery.
it's interesting. I just
it's clever. But I would like to ask, how do you guys feel about this trope that's been happening in the past, I'll say 5 years, like what they did in. Well, they did it in the Space Jam 2, and they did it in, what was the VR movie that came out, the Spielberg film?
Ready Player One.
Ready Player One, where they take all these classic characters that we know from decades ago, and they bring them all back in this, like, almost multiverse-type movie. Do you think that's played out at this point? Because it's been done so many times. Spider-Man have just done it. And although Chippendales doesn't look like it's using the multiverse theory as a theme.
Well, it kind of is, though, isn't it? Like there was clearly like lots of different characters from lots of different IPs within the movie.
Not multiverse by name, but essentially it's the same tactic. Yeah. Where they're bringing back. It just feels to me like, can Rescue Rangers, can Chippendale carry this film alone? Because if not, what's the purpose?
You got to remember this.
Does this film? Yeah, I know, but are we going to keep using that as an excuse for a shambolic film? Not that it is bad. We don't know yet. That remains to be seen. But
and you got to say, okay, Space Jam did it badly because Warner just literally threw in 1,000 characters in the background.
So Warner Brothers literally did the metaverse, multiverse type thing. They literally just said, let's just have everybody in every Warner Brothers property that exists.
Yeah.
In the last last third of the movie, which it was just a mess. It was like, and there was, it became, it got to the point where you weren't even watching the film anymore. It became a let's see who we can pick out in the background. So you weren't even watching the main film. You were just watching the backgrounds for like, let's see.
The film was
It's entirely my point. I don't want this thing to become, so you're in a cinema and kids are just pointing out, oh, there's Pluto and there's Donald Duck and there's whoever, you know, it just becomes this member berry film.
If it can be done well, it can be done badly. And I
agree.
Well, so here's the thing. So Ready Player One, I think the only reason that did it well, and I don't actually think it did well, because I read the books, and the book
are superior.
So the book is about like 80s nostalgia, 70s and 80s nostalgia. And Steven Spielberg himself in an interview said, I realized that the audience that are going to go to watch this film are not going to be old enough to understand most of the references. Therefore, he updated all the references. So they were, instead of them being about really old arcade games and really old video games and really old movies, he updated all the references to be about video, like modern video games and much more modern references. So references more late 90s, early 2000s culture, which is where you get all those member berries from.
There was an entire set piece on The Shining.
Yeah, I know. It was interesting. It was a good mix. I think it did it well. It just didn't do it. I don't think it did the source material justice.
I see. Yeah.
And some bits they updated too much. I think kind of like it leaned way too heavily. The original leaned a lot more heavily on movies and movie culture, and this one leaned way too much into video game culture. But I understand why they did it. Like, I completely agree with Spielberg and his decision of, people just wouldn't have got it. Like, kids today would have watched it, and kids today have no idea. They would have watched it and just been like, what the hell's going on in this movie? Who are these people?
I mean,
why are you
the book where there was a lot of references to early 80s stuff, and like proper first generation arcades. Was so over my head, but I still loved the book, because the book obviously is over a longer time span, so you get to spend that time with the characters. And I understand that they couldn't have done that within a film, because this film would have been like 4 hours long.
Yeah.
And it was like, then, so it's not a perfect film. It was a fun, entertaining adaptation of that book. but the book's going to be superior. And on a similar note with an adaptation, The Martian, the book, is like superior than the film, but the film is still great.
No, true. The film is still great. I do agree
so,
with that.
I think, you know, things can exist. But... you know, together,
but we're getting slightly, yeah, we're getting slightly off topic, so we've kind of moved on to the whole is the book better than the film thing, and that's not what this is about. This is about,
I know.
Is this is this going to lean too heavily on nostalgia bait? I have a feeling it will, like, lean heavily on nostalgia bait, and I'm not sure that's a good thing. And I also think that there's other elements. I've got a feeling we've probably watched, and I laughed at a few of the jokes that happened in that trailer because they were genuinely funny.
But yeah, I thought the jokes were good.
Yeah, but I've got a feeling those might have been the best jokes in the film, and they've just cut a very, very good trailer to a film that's mediocre.
We can hope
that they didn't. But
can I just ask what Chippendales nostalgia? There's no nostalgia for Chippendales. I grew up in that time. I was watching it, and I feel no nostalgia for Chippendales.
What about?
It wasn't one of the bigger cartoons at the time.
I kind of agree with you. I have no nostalgia. I have more nostalgia for gummy bears. No, not
yeah.
gummy bears.
Not gummy yeah. bears.
No, even, no even was, it, was it gummy duck bears? It wasn't gummy bears. DuckTales.
No.
Yeah.
Even DuckTales, yeah.
Gummy bears was still a big one. But no, I think they're all the Saturday morning cartoon like that you would watch. It would be definitely Rescue Rangers. It would be Gummy Bears, DuckTales. And it was like on that ilk. So I think they're all on the same par.
Yeah, I don't know why. Rescue Rangers always struck me as the lower kind of tier in that list.
So I wouldn't have called it lower tier. I would have called it like on tier. But it never spawned a film. Regardless of what I said earlier.
I swear it did.
I had
the Chippendales movies. That's probably what you're thinking of now. I think there were two Chippendale movies.
Was there?
I think so.
I just don't remember them. I just don't remember them. I like I said, I had the brief inkling of like there was two films, but then they weren't. There was a movie special, which was The Rescue Rangers to the Rescue, which was then broken up into a TV show, like a couple of episodes in itself. The fact is, like. You're right, it wasn't ever like a massive, massive show. It didn't ever spawn a movie, like a proper movie. So, you know, there's other shows that did.
How do you feel about the premise of having a 3D character and a 2D character, but the 2D character isn't 2D animated? It's actually just a low-textured 3D model. For me, as an animator, and that's me nitpicking a bit.
I didn't even notice.
If you look at Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which was entirely 2D,
yeah.
You can see a trailer to that film and think, okay, I don't know if this is going to be good or not, but they've put the effort in, so it might actually be a decent film. I look at this trailer and feel like they've got the member berries and they're cutting corners on a premise because Chip or Dale, I don't know which one, is the 2D in quotations character, but it's a 3D model. Obviously, that's nitpicky and it's not going to make or break the movie, but... there are certain things that just kind of tell you if it's going to be good or not. And it kind of seems like a bit of a nostalgia cash-in to me. And it's a very odd thing to make a film about, in my opinion. I never thought there'd be a film about Rescue Rangers.
We'll put it this way. I think you say cutting corners. I think there's still a lot of effort that goes into making a character, and especially a 3D character, a 3D model, no doubt. Make look like a 2D character and pull it off. I didn't notice. So, yeah.
That's fair enough.
I mean, your trained eye might have noticed. I didn't know.
Like an animator would notice instantly, and these people are animators. You know, they're not typists. These people who have created these characters.
The people who are going to be watching this on Disney Plus are not animators. They're probably kids.
And also equally, like, they brought it up in the trailer itself about how, you know, like, this stuff looks really, really janky. So maybe it's they'll poke fun at it.
Well, look, it will be mainly kids watching it, no doubt. But I'm not talking about the film doing well. I'm talking about if it will be good. And those are two completely different things. And a mark of a good film for me doesn't necessarily, you know, it doesn't matter how the film looks. It doesn't matter necessarily if the character's been animated a certain way to my liking. I just look at this film and think it looks pretty throwaway. There's a couple of good jokes in there, but I just, this whole multiverse thing is getting a bit tiresome for me. And again, it's going to be one of these films where, oh, look, there's Goofy. Oh, look, there's Daffy Duck. And I'm just going to be like, this is Chippendale film. Why do I care about all these other characters?
I think you've summed it up quite well in that it's probably going to be very throwaway. I think that's key there.
It's a Disney streaming movie.
That's a perfectly salient point, Sanjay. I think films like this should be out. As long as kids enjoy them, you know, then they serve a purpose.
And I'm sure my kids will enjoy them. So, yeah. Shall we move on?
I feel like we spent enough time on Rescue Rangers.
Okay. So what's next on the docket? Mr. T and Games?
Okay, so the trailer for the new Jordan Peele movie, the horror Nope, well, titled Nope, has just dropped. So we're all going to watch it, right, and we're going to save our opinion till the end.
Let's do it.
Cool.
Have you seen this one yet, Sanj?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, I haven't seen it either. So, Ant, have you seen this trailer?
I have seen this, but I kind of half watched it, so it'd be interesting to watch again.
Barely a trailer reaction at all, but let's do it.
Something's coming.
What's a bad miracle?
Okay.
Oh, so what do you guys think? I'll start with you, Sanj. Opinions?
So I'm really a big fan of Jordan Peele. I really like, you know, his previous other films that he's released, which is Get Out and Us.
Mm-hmm.
So when I heard that he was doing kind of a alien invasion type thriller, yeah, I was definitely looking forward to having a look at this trailer, and it's so far looking interesting. What about you, Nav?
Do you know what? I knew nothing about this film. Obviously, just watched the trailer, and I thought at the beginning of that trailer, I thought, okay, do you know what? Jordan Peele has surprised me. He's gone like on a super happy, interesting story about like about black people in like old school film and like, you know, this modern ranch, and then it turned all dark on me. And then kind of like, okay, this is a bit surprising and different. Let me tell you something that I'm worried for those folk, because if it's the same aliens from what's that M. Night Shyamalan
Signs,
if it's the same aliens as the Signs movie, I mean, there was no water around them there. Those guys are in trouble.
Yeah. Only you would clock that. Although there might be some cacti nearby.
Yeah, there's slice of cactus so open and just gonna
maybe some water.
Spray them with water.
or if you just need to go for a wee.
Yeah, just it looks great. It really does look great. I think Jordan Peele really knows what he's doing when it comes to that kind of stuff. I really enjoyed Get Out. I enjoyed Us. He wrote Candyman, and I did enjoy like the kind of reboot Candyman type thing. So yeah, okay. I'm looking forward to this. I'm really looking forward to this.
Cool. Yeah, I kind of share both your feelings on this. I'm reasonably hyped for this, I'd say. I think anyone that knows me would know I'm a pretty big horror fan. I'd say horror is probably my favorite genre, although I fully acknowledge that it's probably the shittest genre, just in terms of quality and amount of horrors that are out every year and how many of them are bloody unwatchable and awful. So I would say in terms of Jordan Peele films, I didn't really enjoy Us. I thought it was pretty lacking. It had a nice concept and some good shots, but I thought Get Out was definitely his best work. I think that's a fantastic film. I've seen that film a handful of times. I just think it's really, really good. And I don't know, have they actually clarified if this is about aliens or UFOs? Because that is the vibe I'm getting from the trailer.
It seems quite clear that it's got something to do with aliens, yeah. I mean, it's like big stuff in the sky and like weird shit going on.
I even had that Independence Day-esque shot with the shadow looming ahead. Yeah, I think this looks pretty good. I'm reasonably excited. I like Jordan Peele. I think he brings a different style to horror, and I like his implementation of music. Didn't he do I've Got Five on it, like a horror version for Us?
Yeah.
See, that works really well, and you wouldn't necessarily put those two together, but mm-hmm. I think he's got a good sense about horror, and I'm very interested in seeing what he does next.
I think he's generally got a good sense in movies. I mean, his first film that he wrote, he didn't direct it, but he wrote it. You guys seen Keanu?
Haven't watched it. I've watched bits of it on a plane and I fell asleep.
Guys, it's again, I mean, it's with his working buddy, Key. But it's about him losing, like, he gets like really kind of involved with a cat, falls in love with this kitten. And then the kitten gets, and it's a drug kitten because it was a kitten that belonged to a drug dealer before it came to him. And so now the drug dealer wants it back. So there's this whole kind of a cat and mouse chase where they, like, him and his friend have to kind of like try and get the cat back from all these drug dealers.
Sounds interesting.
It's a super entertaining film. I think he just makes super entertaining films. I think he's just a very, like, he writes really, really good scripts. So he's a really good writer.
Yeah.
Get Out was written by him. Us was written by him. Candyman was written by him. You know, like, he doesn't direct everything he writes because he didn't direct Candyman, but he clearly has got a lot of talent when it comes to these kind of creative ideas and thinking outside the box. And you know, he's clearly kind of got this concept now of just an understanding of what makes a good horror movie. I think with Get Out and Us, I think he gets what kind of makes things dark and twisted.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right. He kind of missed the mark a little bit on Us with some of it, but I think overall it was still a great movie. I think he fell into the trap of like trying to catch you out at the end with aha, but here's the thing. And it's like, that probably wasn't needed.
Because the story felt very contained until that point where it seemed on a world scale.
Yeah.
And that kind of destroyed it for me.
Yeah. That was kind of like, so what, there's clones of like everyone? Like, how big are these underground tunnels? How big are these labs?
It didn't make a whole lot of sense. No. There's a scene in that film I absolutely loved, though, and I clocked it on my first watch. Do you remember the scene at the beginning where they're in California at the fairground on the pier?
Yeah.
There's the girl's parents are walking somewhere in the fair, and someone says, I think the father says, oh, they're shooting a movie over there. And that period was 1987. They were shooting The Lost Boys. So there's a direct reference to The Lost Boys being shot in that actual moment when they were there on that pier. And The Lost Boys is like my favorite horror of all time. So I really liked that little touch.
Yeah,
I thought that was really good.
I think I clocked it maybe the second or maybe the third time I watched it, but I did get that as well. And I share your love of The Lost Boys. The Lost Boys is a fantastic movie.
But it was a pointless throwaway detail that only a handful of people from our generation would have clocked. But I appreciate the fact it was there. It didn't have to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shame about the rest of the film. I'm joking.
So moving on, then, what's next on the docket? Is it, or do we have more to say about Jordan Peele?
No. Jordan Peele, all good in my books. So. Hey, so are you guys fans of The Boys?
I'm a massive fan of The Boys. I love the TV show, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, me too.
Cool. I like how you had to specify the TV show. So trailer
it's kind of, kind of turned into a bigger thing as well, because it's a series of comic books as well. It's, you know, it's a universe now, right?
Yeah, well, I've not really seen any of it yet, but I did catch a tiny segment of this trailer. I can't wait to look at it again. So this is The Boys Diabolical, which is a new R-rated cartoon show. So let's check out the trailer.
Let's do it.
Your anger. The violence is never the answer.
Fuck you, you bastard!
Shut up!
You have any idea what a thunderclap to the balls feels like?
Don't be such a pussy!
Holy shit, balls.
Kill me.
Okay, I think I'm going to start by saying that looks brilliant. I'm really hyped for that.
I'm going to have to agree. You haven't seen the TV show, Ant, right?
I've not seen The Boys, no. But this looks decent. It kind of reminds me of Animaniacs, aesthetically, okay. Just in its style. The art style looks like Animaniacs to me.
I don't know much about the show. So I'm definitely going to start looking into it more. But I think the concept, at least as far as I understood, and Sanj, you might know more about the show than I do, but the concept, it seems to be, is that every episode will be a different art style. Is that what it's going to be?
I think it's like the Animatrix / the Star Wars stories they just recently brought out.
Mm-hmm.
Like different 8 stories, I think it just said.
Yeah.
And different styles of animation.
I'm super.
I love that shit.
Yeah. So yeah, I definitely got the Animaniac stuff, like at least from one of the things, and like the hyper realistic stuff from like some of the other stuff.
I think I was mostly referring to the scene at the end with the baby, with the laser eyes. That was very Animaniacs. Mm-hmm. I love the subversion of that cutesy art style with the R-rated violence. It really, really works well.
Yeah, I think the whole that trailer looked amazing, and I mean, Sanj, you've definitely watched The Boys, right? You're a big fan of
The Boys. Oh, I love that show.
Yeah.
To bits.
And I love it to bits as well. I think it's a great show, and it's a really good, the whole show is about subversion of, like, of all of these superheroes that you look up to that just, they have this horrible dark side. If anyone hasn't seen the show, it's available on Amazon Prime. It's fantastic. And yeah, I just, anything The Boys I will consume, because I think everything about it is awesome. And this just seems, and the fact that they managed to get all the voices, all the actors from the original show as well, they've obviously thrown in a bunch of other new voices as well in there, seems awesome.
It was star-studded. That was like, it was star-studded. Aquafina, there was loads of people.
I mean, you've named one person.
Yeah, no, definitely
absolutely
heard
hate.
Jamal.
Yeah.
Don. Aquafina's amazing.
Aquafina's terrible.
Awesome.
But I saw Don Cheadle in there. So yeah, I mean, like, yeah, clearly, like you said, star-studded cast.
If anything, I think the animated series will most likely be a gateway into the live action for me. I'll probably end up watching this first, just because I think it appeals to me more.
I would just say, watch the first episode of The Boys. If it doesn't hook you in the first episode, I don't think any of it will.
Oh, really? Okay, fair enough.
So good. The episode's so good, the first episode, that if it doesn't hook you, then you're never going to like it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even in the first like few minutes of the first episode, if it doesn't hook you.
The first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, yeah, the show itself is great. I also like the fact that this, it said that it was by the same minds that brought you Invincible as well, which I really, really loved Invincible.
I've still not seen that. I've heard so much good about it.
Oh, you need to watch that as well.
Yeah, it's on the back burner. One show I'm going to check out soon.
I mean, did you watch The Walking Dead?
I got to season 2 and I kind of, got bored of it.
So, The Walking Dead was by Robert Kirkman. And he also wrote Invincible, the comic book as well. And then obviously they've adapted the comic book, and again it's all about subversion of superhero characters. So there's in fact, again, Invincible, if you watch it and you get to the end of the first episode and you don't, you'll know by the end of the first episode if you're going to like the rest of the show or not, because it very much kind of gives you a good idea of what it's going to be about, and the kind of, I guess it gives you the lay of the land within the first episode. Again, another show I absolutely love. And I like Robert Kirkman is a great writer. I think he just does excellent work. So, yeah, big fan.
Cool. So, moving on, a new trailer for an Elvis Presley movie just dropped a few days ago. Did you guys get a chance to check this out?
Now, this one I have actually seen, and I was super hyped about it, but I'm looking forward to seeing your reactions if you haven't seen it. Sanj, have you seen it?
I saw the shortened version on Instagram, which got me hyped because it's directed by Baz Luhrmann. I'm a big fan of Baz. So really looking forward to looking at this full trailer.
Have you seen this?
I've seen this trailer in its entirety and I was relatively impressed. So let's roll the trailer.
All right.
There are some who would make me out to be the villain of this here story. Are you born with destiny? Or does it just come knocking at your door?
He's a young singer from Memphis, Tennessee. Give him a warm hayride welcome. Mr. Elvis Presley.
Get a haircut, buttercup.
In that moment, I watched that skinny boy transform into a superhero. He was my destiny.
I wish to promote you, Mr. Presley.
Bathroom party in the county jail.
Are you ready to fly?
I'm ready. Ready to fly.
Tomorrow, all of America will be talking about Elvis Presley.
Where's the car not to move around so much during the take?
If
can't move, I can't sing.
Some people wanted to put me in jail.
So where else moving?
They might put me in jail for walking across the street, but you're a famous white boy.
The way you sing is God-given, so there can't be nothing wrong with it.
Has been shot to death in Memphis. That's all
right for you. Tragedy, but it has nothing to do with us.
It has everything to do with us.
Oh, my Lord, my darling, I've hungered for your touch.
Reverend once told me, when things are too dangerous to say, sing.
Sing!
Come.
I'm on before the show, and nobody's gonna remember me. I need to get back to who I really am. And who are you, Oz?
I just gotta be making the most of this thing while I can.
This can all be over in a flash.
We are the same, you and I. We are two odd, lonely children reaching for eternity.
The greatest show on earth.
Elvis has left the building.
They had to end with that quote, didn't they? What do you think, guys?
Yeah, do you know what? I am super hyped for the film. I like Baz Luhrmann as well. I'm a big fan of most of his films. I worry a little bit. I would be really interested in finding out the whole background of the story of the fact they got Tom Hanks as his manager. Yeah. I really would love to find out more about that, because I've heard like horrible things about how his manager basically just screwed him over throughout his entire life. Yeah. And I've got a feeling, again, this is one of those trailers that's a bit disingenuous. I hope it's being disingenuous in that it's not about him, it's more about his manager. And the trailer just shows a lot more about the flashy stuff, just to try and like hook you in, and it's actually more about the interesting stuff.
When you say the manager, do you mean his relationship with Elvis? So
yeah, his relationship with Elvis and how he kind of, okay, you know, like, yeah, that element. I also worry a little bit. I mean, again, I'm hyped for the film, but I worry a little bit that, like, Austin Butler, the guy who's playing Elvis, to me, I don't know, I just don't think he's, does he have the weight, the gravitas to carry, like, such a heavy role?
Is it because he doesn't look like Elvis? To which I don't think he does. Usually they get in an actor who, like, we saw the Elton John movie, and I forget who played him. I think it was the young lad from Kingsman.
Kingsman, yeah. It? God,
oh, I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Joel Edgerton.
Edgerton, yeah.
Yeah, something Edgerton, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Once he but like donned the glasses and
that's the other guy, isn't it? The Australian.
That's the Australian guy, yeah.
No, but he's got Edgerton or something in, isn't it?
But he actually kind of looks like Elton John, although I don't think it's necessary. So Nav, you were saying you're interested in the manager's role in the film.
I'm really interested in basically, yeah, in the Tom Hanks role, the Colonel Tom Parker. Like that role to me sounds really, really interesting. And if the film is about that, it'd be awesome. I hope that it is. I hope it's more about that than it is about Elvis himself, because I think there's been films about Elvis before. And I think his life has been very well documented. I would love to understand more about the kind of some of the more seedy stuff that happened in the background where his manager, like I said, his manager effectively screwed him over. In the end, Elvis was basically like just died poor, which is insane. Supposedly, like, not supposedly, he did die on the toilet as well, which is a horrible way for a person to die. It's grim.
I think I learned that from Eminem. So if you can rely on any artist to give you that kind of info, it's definitely Mr. Mathers. But yeah, I mean, a well-documented career, like you said, Nav, but oddly, an artist I don't know a whole lot about. I've never been an active Elvis listener. And I'm glad this film looks quite good, because this will be my gateway into Elvis and just learning about his life. You know, I've heard about all the seediness and all the terrible things, like how he, I think he married like a 14-year-old girl, you know, back in the day. And I've heard about all the stuff of his manager. And there's also a lot of talk about how he kind of stole black music and appropriated it and things of that nature. But as well as all the bad stuff, I hear a lot of good. I remember growing up and watching Eddie Murphy do his, I think it was his Delirious show, and he just raved about Elvis. He always talked about how Elvis was like one of the baddest, bad in a good sense, artists that he's ever heard. So on one hand, I heard the bad things and then I heard the good. So it's going to be really interesting to get a chance to form my own opinion. I also, it's hard to also form your opinion because a lot of this will just be Hollywood and fake. So it's hard to tell how true to life this will actually be. But having said that, it does just look like a fun movie, and I'm kind of eager to watch it actually. It's looking good.
Sanj?
Yeah, I feel the same. I think interested when Tom Hanks is always on a project. You know, he normally delivers. I don't think I've seen many bad movies starring him. So, yeah, I don't have the same reservations that you guys have, or at least you have with the actor. I think it's good they haven't gone with someone kind of known. So yeah. Hopefully he can, you know, fully embody that role when we haven't got anything tainting like his previous work, basically. Like, oh, he's already typecast being something else. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it overall.
And would you say Tom Hanks being in that role is a big selling point?
Definitely, it's using star power, definitely for it. But, like, Elvis is on as a name. Is its own star power, isn't it?
Elvis does have its, yeah, just having that on the as the name of the film is its own star power. But to be honest, he is pretty much the only big name attached to the thing. So kind of that definitely draws some kind of level of credibility to the production, right?
That's the title of the film, right? You can call a film anything. It doesn't mean it's going to be good.
True.
So I think having, for me at least, I don't know the main actor that's playing Elvis, so seeing Tom Hanks there kind of tells me that he read the script and gave it a thumbs up and
exactly. I think
approved it.
Yeah, I think the other thing as well, I've seen a few of the things like Austin Butler's been in, the main actor. I just don't recall him being in anything that involved singing at all. So I don't know what his singing chops are. And to me, when you kind of have a person who wants to do a sing, like wants to portray a musician, like Bradley Cooper, like I it was Taron Egerton, by the way, was the guy.
Yeah, cool.
Taron Egerton is a fantastic singer. The guy's been in multiple films where he's used a singing voice. I actually think he was in a film called Sing, an animated movie called Sing, where he did an Elvis song. And because the people who, not Elvis, sorry, who are we talking about? What was the film?
Elton John.
He did an Elton John song in that film, and the people who were making the Elton John film heard him singing and thought that his voice was so good that he could play Elton John. And that's what I want to see. And then they made him look, and you can always make someone look like someone else with makeup and prosthetics or even CGI, right? So that's not a battle that you need to struggle with. I think it would have been nice. And again, I don't know if the guy actually can sing and he actually does like some of his own stuff, that'd be amazing. It just adds a little bit of authenticity to the production.
I got a feeling he's probably got that type of background of like being triple threat, because I think he's like a Disney kid.
He was a Nickelodeon kid, yeah.
Yeah, so you know, like that type of, a lot of them normally train in you know,
a bunch of different things.
All of the things. So I've just looking at his name again. I remember him from the Shannara Chronicles. That was on, I think it's on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he's a not decent enough actor, but you know, the bar wasn't very high on like a teen sci-fi fantasy show.
Exactly.
So it'll be interesting to see.
He looks like someone who belongs in a Twilight movie, not in a production where he's headlining as Elvis. That's my opinion.
It does look like he should be sparkling in the sun, doesn't he?
Exactly. That's my concern. but again, Sanj, as you say, like at the end of the day, Tom Hanks generally doesn't sign on to movies that bad, right? So.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything recently that's been controversial that I think is it's horrible film is Cloud Atlas, where he's in.
I thought you'd say that.
I had a feeling you'd say that.
I've not seen it.
Fucking horrible.
Yeah, so the problem I have with that is it's a film that like the book is like that fat. The book is ridiculous. So the film a lot of people say it's a film that is unfilmable because just the kind of scale of it is just too much, and you can see that it suffers because it tries to condense so much into such a short movie. I didn't dislike it. I thought it was an average to good. I didn't think it was a great movie, but I'm looking at his stuff now. I don't see anything bad.
I haven't watched his recent film, Finch, last year.
I haven't seen that yet either, but I've heard that he's the best thing about it. I've heard the film is average, but he kind of elevates it, which is generally what I find about most of the stuff that he's in that is bad, and there are things that he's done that are bad, but he generally elevates it out of the bad into the like more than watchable.
Isn't it literally just him and a robot
and a dog
so he out-acts the dog and the robot.
he out-acts a dog and a robot. Yeah,
wow.
But it's not Chappy.
Yeah. Well, serious acting chops.
I mean, Chappy was, you know, Chappy's Chappy. So anyway,
I've still not seen Chappy.
Not why, but it's going to be a dumpster fire.
No, it's I enjoyed Chappy. I didn't think it was a bad film.
It's the reason that he lost Aliens Covenant.
Well, to be fair, I think he dodged a bullet there with Alien Covenant. So
moving swiftly on, unless you guys have any more to add to Elvis. Cool, we're gonna let the king rest in peace. Move on swiftly. So moving forward, a film that we all got a chance to watch was Nightmare Alley. Nightmare Alley, a new film, just came out, was it early this year? Starring Bradley Cooper and Willem Dafoe. So, Nav, I'd like to hear what you think.
What do you think? Shall I give you the shortened version, or shall I give you the long? I'll give you the shortened version first.
How'd you like, mate?
Okay, I'll start with the short version. Short version, I dislike the movie. There we go. Let's put a stamp on it. Like, comment, subscribe. Let's move on to the next. No. I dislike the film. I think it had numerous problems. I think there were some elements of it that I thought were great. I thought the setting was great. The characters were pretty interesting. The costumes were done superbly. The adaptation, I've actually seen there was an original movie, and I think this is a remake of the original movie. I saw the original film and I thought this film did it slightly better, but I still dislike the film. I'm going to move on to Sanj for his shortened review, and then we can kind of deep dive, and maybe you can give a short opinion as well, and then we can deep dive. Sanj, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I definitely enjoyed this film. It definitely has its issues. One of them is pacing. It is far too long. I think we'll go into spoilers afterwards when we go into deep dive, but there are just issues with certain things of the movie. So, but overall, I really enjoyed it. Again, aesthetically, the costumes, everything is amazing. Direction, you know, Guillermo doing what he does. Surprised. I'm trying to think. Did it get nominated? No, that's Denny. I was thinking about who got nominated for their best picture and best director. I think he did get a nomination for both. So I think it was Dune that got nominated for best film, but Denny didn't get nominated for best director, which doesn't really make sense. How do you get nominated for best film but not best director? I don't know. That's why no one cares about awards. And if you do, check out our video about us talking about Oscars.
So it'll be in the corner somewhere. They're probably over there somewhere. Somewhere. There you go.
So that's my shortened opinion. Ant, what about you?
Yeah, fair enough. I think all the pluses that you guys mentioned are pretty obvious from the offset. The film looks absolutely fantastic. The acting is top tier. And I also think it falls victim to the things that you both mentioned, such as pacing. I think the film could have been cut down at least half an hour. And I feel like, I think, Nav, a very similar issue you had with Dune. One of the few issues you had where it kind of just lingers on a shot a bit too long. It kind of had that issue as well. But I enjoyed the film overall. So should we get into a more kind of detailed thoughts on
guys, I'm going to put a little time card right now. This is when we're about to get spoiler heavy. So this is pre-spoilers. This is what we thought. Let's go into spoiler territory. Go on then, Ant.
Okay, so I watched this film in two parts, mostly because I tend to watch films these days very late. I work a lot of hours, so I have a small pocket of time in which I can watch films. So I watched the first half a few days ago and the second half this morning in bed. And my initial thoughts were, after watching the first half, this film looks fantastic and the acting, like I said, is top tier, but it needs to do a lot in its second half to kind of reel me in and for me to actually think this is a good film, because style and acting alone doesn't really win the day. Forget what you've been told. It you need a good narrative, good story, and it has to work on many levels. I feel like the film did a great job of setting up details in the early part of the film that you kind of initially think are throwaway, but they come back at some point and really kind of hit home in a big way. I actually called what the ending would be. I don't know why. I've got this thing when I watch films, it's a bad habit. I kind of try to guess plot twists, and I kind of guessed that he would be the geek at the end. So this film is pretty much a rise and fall story, I would say, wouldn't you say, guys? So you have Bradley Cooper starting from nothing, and then he works his way up to high society. He's a wheeler dealer. He's a bad, scuzzy guy, but under the guise of this professional magician. And it all comes crumbling down in a spectacular fashion towards the end. I thought this film, it did a lot for me. I'd give it an 8 out of 10. Obviously, you know, we're not giving reviews, but just to kind of give a sum up of how good I thought the film was, it was an 8 out of 10 for me. Pretty solid movie. The real killer for it was the pacing. And I talk about pacing quite often on this podcast. It's something, if I look at every film that I like throughout the years and I try to identify what I like about the films that have gone down in history as my favorites, they all have a similar trait, and that's the pacing is really on point. And I feel like Nightmare Alley would have really benefited from being a bit more concise and a bit more scaled down, because it's odd to see such a high budget movie about something very specific, and it's not trying to lose you in its story. It's not getting too complex for its own good. It's really about, it's quite a small story and a very simple story, and it's pulled off incredibly well, but it kind of lost me.
Yeah.
Because it didn't need that how long was it? 2.5 hours? It didn't need that length to tell such a simple story. But the package, the overall package for me was brilliant. Was it Del Toro's best work? No, I don't think so. I thought Pan's Labyrinth was better. I thought The Shape of Water was probably a better film. But I still enjoyed this more than your average film.
So I think, I'm just going to echo a lot of what you said. I think watching it in two parts, I didn't watch it in two parts, but I think that you did probably is quite telling, that it does almost feel like two different films at times. the beginning half where he's basically working at the circus is very much one film, and then it almost like the film almost completely resets its pacing once it moves into the city elements, and he's kind of like working in high society. You could almost start the film at that point and not miss anything. There is you could cut that entire first segment of the film and not miss any element. He's just a con man working in the city, gets embroiled in some bad stuff happens. Find the payoff at the end about him being a geek wouldn't have paid off, but you cut that out. He turns into an alcoholic and a bum, and that's it. That's the end of the movie. You know, that would have been an interesting story. Or even like the stuff at the beginning, just keep that as its own individual story. Guy does some bad stuff, runs away from home, joins the circus, and goes on a journey there of kind of discovery and figuring out who he is. I think just the pacing was so off for me, and like you said, so much of it I think could have just been trimmed just to kind of make it a much more succinct and interesting story, and something that would keep you interested all the way through. It just felt indwelled on things just far too much. Not so much dwelling on scenes, like Dune dwelled on scenes, but more dwelling on plot points, which just didn't seem necessary at all. The acting was superb though, so you can't really kind of fault that. And there was some kind of, again, this is nitpicking, and it's a book, and it's another film as well. So like I'm arguing on the points of the book and the actual plot now. I think there was elements of the plot that I just disagreed with. I don't understand why he despises drinking, but then he starts drinking. That just almost comes out of nowhere. It's like, oh, like he's cheating on his wife. But like, why is that suddenly then he's going to start drinking now? He gives this woman money for him to hold. Like, why does she feel the need to screw him out of the money at the end when she says the money doesn't even matter? Like,
that also didn't make too much sense to me.
It's because he showed her up.
Yeah, he showed her up in front of
the whole crowd. So it was about ego. So these are the key points. And like, that's her whole motivation, was she was there to screw him over in the first place and show him that he's a fraud. And then because he had a pile of tricks basically that he's learned from the circus or wherever, he figured her out. And then he could have stopped, but he then went in on her and then like humiliated her in front of that crowd. Just like Rooney Mara, his girlfriend, says it just like after they go to the dressing room afterwards. She's like, why did you go that one step too far? And that's it. That is the motivation between, and she's you. And then Cate Blanchett is an amazing actress, but you could see from that first interaction in the kind of her office when they were having a session or like starting their first meeting, I could tell it was telegraphed that she was going to screw him from day one. Like it was like it wasn't a shock for me turning around. And then her screwing him over. That wasn't like a...
Yeah, the shock for me, you're right. The shock, there wasn't a shock about her screwing him over. That to me didn't come out of nowhere. Mm. And very similar to you, I also try and do the same thing of like movies. It's a bad habit of trying to guess the ending. You watch enough films that you end up being able to predict quite well what's going to happen. And it was just flagging the geek stuff too much at the start for it to not be important. It's very much a setup. Like it was literally like lining all your ducks in a row.
It was foreshadowing. Yeah. It was foreshadowing to like the nth degree.
Yeah.
It wasn't poorly done foreshadowing. It worked.
No, it was well done. It was just longed out and then.
Yeah.
I mean, a thing I actually quite annoyed me about the film is they seemed to have this, although not perfect plan, they had a plan of fooling the guy into believing that was his deceased wife, was it? And they had it all planned out. He was supposed to be on his knees. She was supposed to walk in at a relative distance. He was supposed to see her and she was supposed to disappear into the night. But it didn't plan out that way, but for no reason. There's no reason it didn't go perfectly well. Why didn't Bradley Cooper have him on his knees before she walked in? Why did she get so close to him?
I think she
literally walks like 5 foot.
So, I think there's an element there that kind of almost skipped over, which was done better in the original film. That was the guy was an abuser and he beat his girlfriend, who's his deceased girlfriend. He was horrible to women, and it's supposed to come as a shock to Bradley Cooper's character, which Bradley Cooper does kind of like have a bit of shock, like, hold on, wait, what? Like recoil a bit at the shock that this guy is actually not just a nasty person as a gangster, but he's a genuinely like horrible person to women.
It's like an evil serial killer type.
Proper evil kind of guy. So I think that kind of threw him a bit, and that kind of threw off that whole element. But I agree, like, there was lots of things that happen for no reason as to like why they turn, they happen the way they do. For me, I mean, you've given the film an 8 out of 10, right? Is that your score? Yeah, I wouldn't rate it higher than a 5. I think to me there's too many issues with it. I wouldn't have given it more than a 5, and it's just definitely not Del Toro's best work. Like you say, he's done so much better with. I've really enjoyed Hellboy 2. The problem is, I think I'm now just, for me, Del Toro is a guy who thrives in like kind of fantasy, fantasy genre of kind of like really interesting, different kind of elements.
Yeah.
So The Shape of Water, Hellboy 2, Hellboy, like the kind of just real fantasy, like Shape of Water. Like you said, this just didn't fit for me. And I think it really tries to kind of drum that horror beat, horror elements in with just gore, and that just doesn't work for me. It's like, why? Like, it's just, there's just no need to kind of show a guy who's been shot in the ear and like his chunks of his ear are hanging off, or like the geek where, like, you know, like he's been bludgeoned, and there's just no need for that kind of stuff. It didn't add anything to the film. It was literally just like, okay, let's just, like, Del Toro is known for horror, let's tick that box, you know. That also just felt like overly done to me.
Well, I wouldn't even regard it as a horror. At no point did I think this is a horror film. It was more of a thriller, if anything, and it was a horror in its aesthetic, I'd say, with the stuffed baby inside the jar and the carnival setting. I've always found carnivals and fairs quite creepy, especially fairs of like the 1940s. I think they got that down to a T. That looked really good, but there wasn't really any horror in sight, and there wasn't really any horror to mention until it got a bit gruesome, like you said. And I also don't regard blood and gore as horror. There wasn't any kind of, although there was like a sinister undertone throughout, it wasn't like an uneasy feeling like you got watching The Shining or The Exorcist or a film like that. So they kind of missed that beat, I'd say. If Del Toro was going for a horror, I think he missed that mark. But yeah, all in all, I think it's quite odd for me to give such a high score to a film with poor pacing, and I'm acknowledging this film has very poor pacing. But compared to most films I watch these days, I did really enjoy it. So I can only score it based on the enjoyment I got from it, and I thought it was great. I might actually watch it again, to be honest with you. So, yeah, I liked it. What about you, Saj?
Yeah, I mean, I think he did hit those beats now and again, especially when he used the Toni Collette's character when she was doing the tarot stuff, and like that giving, you know, a little bit of tension and a bit of suspense of, oh, how's this going to go? We all know it's going to go badly, but it was that, you know, it was kind of, you know, it was there. It was some of it for me. We're going to hit the pacing mark again. And like, yeah, I really struggled not to pick up my phone. I was like, because I'm really bad these days with ADHD and just, you know, need to be doing something as well. I normally try, I'm really good with films. I normally try and give them my full attention. But this one I was like struggling with it because of the pacing. But again, like you said, the acting's superb. Like, I don't think a single person in this film was bad at all. I mean, like, yeah. Got Rooney Mara, great actress, Kate Blanchett. Hellboy in there as well.
Yeah, I mean, it had a laundry list of great actors in it. At the end of the day. I mean, William Dafoe as well, superb in it. You can't fault any of the actors. Does it deserve does it deserve a nomination for Best Picture? Hell no, in my opinion. Hell no. Does it deserve that?
I mean, this is the thing.
Cinematography, maybe. Costume design, definitely. And the fourth nomination is for production design. Which,
but
again,
this is the argument we had on the again on the Oscars episode. is about this is the perfect quintessential Oscar film, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. It ticks that box. I mean, it looks like an Oscar film.
The arty, whatever. Let's this the film noir. You know, this is exactly
made
for an Oscar.
It does feel. It does feel like.
But you're now saying this isn't. This shouldn't be nominated then.
So I don't think. I don't think it's good. I don't think it's good enough to be a Best Picture.
That frees up a spot for No Way Home, right?
That's definitely not. Definitely not. That's. Do you know what? It actually does deserve a best. Let's keep that Best Picture in there. Sorry. What would you?
I think it actually does deserve it. Actually, really? I totally disagree with you.
What would you give it out of 10 then?
I would go with Ant. I would say it's an 8. I think it's not a 9 because it's not like amazing. And
it's not got a man in spandex who can fire webs from his arms, so it's not a 9.
No, but yeah, I think I just expected a little bit more from Del Toro, because he's normally pretty good with his pacing. I think he's normally very good with, like, even if it's a long
you
film,
think,
it's there for a reason.
You think so? I think his pacing on Hellboy 2 was off.
I think aesthetically that film looks amazing. I'm not the biggest fan of it.
Right. I also think his pacing, again, I'm going to like kind of nitpick here. I think his pacing, I love Pan's Labyrinth, but I think the pacing on that was, there was elements of that where the pacing was off. Again, I'm not going to say he's a perfect filmmaker. And I, like, yeah, Pacific Rim, I feel the pacing was off a little bit. There's definitely been films where he's had pacing issues, but this just seemed to be the one that suffered the most, in my opinion. Like I said, you could cut the movie in half, and it'd probably be a better movie for.
I totally disagree with that as well. When you're saying they could do totally separate films, because I think there's key elements of the stuff in the start and
you reckon
need at the end. Yeah. Like the setup, all that setup's important. Like,
what does the setup give you?
It doesn't do a great job of it, but it's trying to give those character elements. Like, why is he on the run? Like, and then you don't get that bit till like halfway through, where it's about his dad and he his dad was an alcoholic and obviously he was abusive, and his mum.
His mum passed away. But here's my problem with that. So yes, here's my problem with all of that dad stuff. None of that stuff is really explained until the second half of the film. So why do you need the first half of the film to exist to help you understand that? Because all that, like the relationship with his dad, all that stuff is explored through flashbacks in the second half. When he's in the city.
But then all the geek stuff and that, then you said you don't need it, but like, I think
the geek stuff is cool. It's cool that that's how it ends.
The most important part of the whole story,
you could have just turned into an alcoholic, and they could have ended it a different way. Let's say he dies the same way his father dies, like freezing cold in a bed. You know, they could have done something along the lines of that.
I was thinking a good ending, although I like the geek ending, and I called it, and you called it as well, Nav. I thought a better ending would be, excuse me, is when he pulls up in the train, the door slides open, and you see the fairground, and that's it. It just cuts there. He's back at square one. He's back at the fairground. That's all you need. You don't really need any more after that, I don't think. I don't think he needs to be the geek. He just needs to be back at square one. Because if you remember where he starts at the beginning of the film, he's not in the best shape. He's kind of fallen on hard times.
Yeah, but I think there is elements of... I mean, there's elements of the geek stuff, especially like when... can't remember the name of the actor, but I really like the actor who starts giving him a drink at the end.
I've seen him in a few things. What have I seen him in?
Tim Blake Nelson. He's been in a bunch of things. He's always a slimy character,
like a cowboy type.
He was in the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and he was Buster Scruggs. That was, but like when he's pouring him a drink, to say, like, I do have one position. And he never takes a sip himself, as you notice, because that's the stuff that's laced with opium.
Yeah.
Like, there's cleverness like that, which I thought was interesting. And I do...
But it's also his willingness, because he's accepting his fate. That's kind of the whole point of it as well. That he knows what that is. He's not unaware. He's not being fooled like the other geeks. He's walking into it purposely, because he now believes that that's what he deserves. It's meant to be deeper.
The deepness of it's the role I was born to play.
Exactly.
Is deep. But do they need an hour at the start of the movie to explain that stuff?
No, like I said, we said the pacing's the issue. I think all of that is needed. It just needed to be cut down.
Him killing the guy he learns from. Can't remember the name of the character, but he kills the guy, right?
Yeah, the guy who's Tony Collette's husband.
Collette's husband. Yeah, like that to me was just interesting. Like, I don't get that concept at all. Like, why did he kill him? Like, what was the?
Because he wasn't going to give him the book. He didn't want to give him his secrets.
But then
basically said, "I'm not going to teach you. Like, these, if these can be manipulated and used badly, basically." So that's why I can't give it to you.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
That's why, because he wouldn't give it to him. So he killed him because he wanted the book.
Yeah.
I actually don't think that story beat was clear enough.
It wasn't clear enough.
Because at the beginning, the guy said, right, this is the real alcohol and this is the poisonous alcohol right next to each other, oddly. And it kind of seemed to me like he accidentally took the wrong alcohol. I think you needed that beat. Yeah. I know for you, Sanj, you're probably thinking, oh, it's better to think about it, you know, it's better not to have everything.
I think it was pretty telegraphed when, like, it was him because of the whole book thing.
I don't think it was. There was elements of being telegraphed. And even he says that it was an accident and he picked the wrong one up by himself when he's being interviewed by Cate Blanchett's character later.
That's how it seemed to me. That's how it came across as an accident.
Yeah, it came across as an accident. And he was surprised. He was shocked. The next morning when
he's lying to himself, that's what he was doing. I think
could be him lying to himself. Yeah, I mean, there's elements.
That kind of makes it better in a way. Like he...
Because we know he's capable of murder because he's killed his dad.
Yes, exactly.
It's very different. So here's the thing. I think it's very different. Like taking your dad's blanket away and watching him die than actually going to the extreme of killing someone, which, like, he's never portrayed as a bad character. Like, his dad was a bad guy. He deserved to die. That's the kind of element there. Then later when his mentor dies, and you're saying he did it on purpose to steal the book, but that could have been an accident. And, you know, that's, so he didn't want the guy to die. And again, that's just a bad thing happened, because fundamentally Bradley Cooper's character is a good character until he gets to the big city, and then he's corrupted by greed, effectively, is how I read it.
I don't know. I think that's his corruption's kind of shown throughout.
Always there.
Like, because I don't understand whether was Tony Collette's character a brothel from the start?
Sorry, say that again?
Because he sleeps with her.
Oh, I think she's just a slut.
It wasn't clear that was actually a brothel.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think it was. I think she just, that's the whole point. So he's already, he didn't say, oh no, your husband just walked out the door.
He did.
Oh no.
He did literally say that.
No, but like, yeah, but like, he didn't say, it didn't stop him, though.
Well, no, that's because she said, it's fine. He understands.
Okay.
So you watched it a few weeks ago, so I'll forgive the fact that you don't remember, but that's literally that happened in the film. Like, he says, right, your like, husband, what about your husband? Horrible. And she's like, it's fine, he understands, move on.
I don't know. Do you reckon he knows that it's happening?
I don't know, that's the way I think,
it's a grey area. So he's already portrayed as morally grey, at least.
I mean, he is very much more, I mean, he's not morally grey by the end, is he? Just,
no, but I'm saying at the start, he's already morally grey.
I think that's how they'd like to portray him. I don't think he's morally grey at the start. I don't think that's how they portray him at all. Because you think back to the geek, and the geeks run away. This guy tries to see the humanity in him and tries to help him as much as possible. This is a guy who, like William Dafoe's characters, just leave him there, leave him on the street, and they'll hopefully pick him up. And he's like, no, are we just going to leave him there? We're just going to leave him to like die? He's like, no, someone will come out from the Samaritans and help him. Like, he's not morally gray at all. He is a good guy trying to do the right thing.
It's kind of like a Walter White scenario where you have this character who's fundamentally pretty decent, but things just spiral. And you see the decline of this character, you know.
I think it's a mishmash, because there's an element of him declining because he's doing bad things. He's taking advantage of people. He's taking advantage of people's feelings. But then at the same time, there's this whole like left field thing. I mean, it's not a left field thing because it's flagged and it happens throughout the film, but Cate Blanchett's character kind of is the person that pushes him over the edge and makes him do all this bad stuff and takes him to alcohol, makes him cheat on his wife, steals all his money and then throws him to the curb, right? It just feels like if she wasn't there, he would have been perfectly fine and there wouldn't have been a moral issue. Like, he would have been a pretty good guy. And it seemed like he was a bit of a dick to his wife, like, which you kind of got the impression of. But it wasn't extreme. You know, he wasn't unfaithful. It just seems like, yeah, the film's a mishmash. At one point, he's morally grey. I think, Sanj, you're right. He's morally grey sometimes.
And yeah, I don't right. think he's bad.
At some point, he's in the middle,
he's tipped one way.
But that's the problem. I think he's just all over the place, based on what the film needs him to be at the time. Which is just
when he does,
isn't that most of us?
Yeah.
None of us are all bad.
Yeah, but
someone manipulating you to do one thing or the other.
We're not good. We're not bad. But we are generally humans are consistent, right? Generally, you are mostly good or mostly bad. Yeah.
Kanye recently, then. Yeah.
I haven't actually. No, we won't go into it. The point is, this guy is flip flapping. Every other scene in the film, he's flip flapping from one thing to another.
Might be bipolar, then. He might be Kanye. He might be bipolar.
Well, bipolar is a terrible excuse for flip-flopping. But he seems to flip-flop a lot in the movie. And that's just, for me, another negative. I think just the story doesn't hold.
I didn't see him as a flip-flopper. I saw him as a pretty consistent character who kind of buckled under the pressure. So the scenes where he does get violent and physically attacks people, that was under pressure. What would have the outcome be had he not done that? Had he not killed the guy in a graveyard, he probably would have been murdered himself. So he's kind of playing with these two thoughts. I don't want to kill this guy, but if I don't, I'll be arrested, or his security guards are going to come out and kill me. So this is the only choice I have. Yeah, I put myself in this situation, but fuck it. I'm in this position now and I need to deal with it as best I can. And that's all he had in the moment. So, is he a good guy? No, but I feel like he buckled, and his girlfriend obviously did the best thing by getting as far away from him as possible, because he was a lost cause. But I never saw him as an evil character.
Okay.
I don't see
him as evil. I just see him as
a flawed
character who was manipulated by the wrong person when he thought he was manipulating them. On, like you said, he got that book and he thought he was in charge when she just told
him. I will say one thing though, one last thing just to end. Going into this, I was kind of hoping, although I liked it, I was hoping it would be a horror film set in a carnival in the 1940s. And just stay within that carnival setting. So I'm still pining for that film. So if someone can make it happen, Del Toro sequel, maybe.
Yeah. And if you are watching Del Toro, hit us up with that collab and like, comment, subscribe, Del Toro, for more epic content.
Yeah.
What, Benicio?
Yeah. Oh, Benicio.
Come on.
Benicio's too busy working on the next Disney thing, right? Like, the guy is just one Disney property after another.
Mate,
he's in everything Disney. You name it, he's in it.
I don't know. All right, we'll talk about that next time, maybe.
Okay.
Oh, well, that pretty much rounds off everything for today's show. Thank you so much for watching and hitting the like button. And again, if you can, subscribe. We're a new channel and we we like the help. So we're gonna have some more content coming for you pretty soon. So like and subscribe, and till next time, guys.
Peace out, guys.
See you later.